Okay, we seem to be rolling. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rudden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
Welcome to a special Valentine's Day edition
of
Shipping and Handling, in which two single ladies sit in a room together.
And talk about books.
Talk about romance.
Let's do it! Well, we decided to talk about this today, partly because of Valentine's Day coming up, but also because I was tweeting earlier today about romance, and it seems to have struck some sort of nerve, got a whole bunch of retweets and favorites in a short period of time, so by a whole bunch, I mean like 10, 20, so.
That's exciting.
Yeah. But what it came from the fact that I was talking to Felicity Disco, who is Maureen Johnson's assistant.
That is the best name.
It's not her real name.
I don't care.
It's like how the agent Kate Testerman, who is Maureen Johnson's agent, was known on the internet for a very long time as Daphne Unfeasible. Maureen likes assigning ridiculous names.
New life goal. Become friends with Maureen Johnson.
Get an anonymous internet name.
End of list.
And then I can die happy.
Yes.
So I also know Felicity Disco's real identity, but she keeps it sort of separate, so I'm not going to share what it is. But so she was talking about how she had just recently read Ella Enchanted for the first time, and I flipped out because this was one of my favorite childhood books. There was actually, it's a sort of defining moment for me. There was one year when I read it, and I was like, no, I don't like it. I don't like that it has this, like, sad interlude right before the romance actually comes through. I don't understand why it can't just be happy. And so I was like, I don't like this book. And then I read it again a year later, and I was like, oh my God, this is the best book ever.
My life has changed.
So there was some defining moment in between that year that changed the way I saw the world.
Nice.
But it's one of my... It has one of my favorite fictional romances. There are so many reasons I love it. But a huge part of it is that Prince Char falls in love with Ella because she makes him laugh. He's always been too stiff and upright and not really had any friends because he's being groomed to be the next king. And so he's always been this very formal little child. And this girl comes along who he thinks is just absolutely hilarious, and he falls in love with her because of that. And it's I love the way that it's depicted in the book as well, because you see them having all of these sort of instantly comfortable conversations with each other, mm-hmm. where they just,
yeah,
she's saying these things and I, the reader, think they're hilarious and he thinks they're hilarious. And so we're all sort of laughing together and having a great time. And then about midway through the book, you meet some of his sort of army buddies for the first time. These people who are technically under him but are also his superiors and are there to protect him. And one of them says to her, it's just so nice to see him laugh. He never laughs. And you're like, but he laughs all the time.
Because she's great.
She's so great.
Yeah, she's so great.
And so I was talking a little bit about this and I realized something, which I will read my tweet to you. You can also see it on Twitter.
This feels very meta. We're going to read a tweet on a podcast that we're recording on a laptop.
Social media.
Zeitgeist. I really hate that I just said that, but it's too late. It's out there. Can't take it back.
Anyway, the tweet that I wrote was, I don't necessarily want to be convinced the love interest is lovable. I want to love the main character so much, I assume the love interest will too. It's if you can make me fall in love with the main character, mm-hmm. I will assume that anyone they fall in love with is deserving of their love. You don't have to convince me of it. And I will be very invested in the person that they love loving the main character as much as I do.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is the real alchemy to making me care about a romance, is getting me invested mm-hmm. in the main character.
Yeah. Well, it's funny to think about it, you know, in the context of what is coming up this weekend, which is the premiere of the 50 Shades of Grey film.
Yes.
And how little the sort of quote-unquote romance in that book had to do with either of the characters. It almost felt like it was, I don't know, I'm not really quite sure where I'm going with this, but I don't think of that book as a romantic book.
No.
It is technically a romance, Yes. And it sort of follows that structure, sort of, kind of, I don't know. But, you know, their relationship to me, I mean, quite apart from the sort of obvious issues that are presented, you know, did not feel, it didn't feel real, it didn't feel earned, it just felt like, it felt like an IKEA catalog, you know? Like, it's not someone's real life. It's like a simulacra of a of a real life. It's set design, yeah. So, okay, so Ella Enchanted, who are your other top three? Top three fictional romances.
Well, the other one that I was, there are a couple that I'm just weirdly invested in. Another one is Anne Shirley and Gilbert Blythe, naturally.
Is this Real Talk time where I confess I've never read those books?
Oh my god. You may honestly be too old at this point.
Yeah.
They're...
I feel like I may at some point have lied about reading those books, but I am determined to live an honest life, and I have not...
Sharing with the world, confessing.
I have not read Anne of Green Gables.
Well, some of it's better than others. Ella Montgomery tends to be a little bit purple in her prose. Lots of descriptions of trees and sunsets. She even makes fun of it at one point, because Anne is sort of a writer, and so she writes this one story and goes on and on about, like, the sunsets and the magnificent scenery and everything, and so, and she sort of makes fun of this. It's like, you need to cut those things sometimes. I'm like, well, Lucy, no one really ever told you to do that, did they? But the central romance is one of the most honest and compelling that I've ever read. And there's this one line that I always return to. Anne is, like, holding off on this for a long time. First she hates Gilbert, and then they become friends, and she's like, no, we can never ruin our friendship. But he's very clearly in love with her and keeps trying to bring up that he's in love with her. And she's like, no, shut up.
Shut it
down. Not allowed. And so there's one point in Anne of Avonlea where she asks Marilla, her adopted mother, why does everyone always think that I should marry Gilbert Blythe? And Marilla just looks at her and goes, because you were made and meant for each other, and that's the reason.
Like, that's
and it's
sweet.
Also, that really comes across in the story as well. I'm just like, I really want them to be together for so many reasons. And so that was a formative relationship for me in my reading. But the other one that I kept talking about was, of course, Elizabeth and Darcy from Pride and Prejudice.
As well you should.
Naturally.
As well you should.
And the thing that really is striking about that is that the book spends very little time trying to convince you that Darcy is lovable. In fact, it spends a lot of time trying to convince you he's not.
Yeah.
He's just, like, a terrible person. He's openly rude to Elizabeth's face. Everyone hates him. He's just cold and off-putting, and so many reasons why he's not really lovable. But the book spends a lot of time getting you to love Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when she changes her mind and she decides that she loves Darcy,
and she starts noticing the things about him that are
actually
good
things,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, he's not such a cold-hearted dick,
like,
after
oh,
all.
He did something nice.
Aww.
But as soon as she changes her mind, all that I cared about was that he agreed with me that Elizabeth is the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, it's the sort of thing where you get me invested in the main character's happiness, and then I want whatever will make that character happy.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was Darcy.
Yeah. Aw. Yay. Well, for me, I mean, I'm sort of having to exclude some of the romances in my clients' books because I love them and am invested in them.
I feel like this is a separate thing.
But so for me, my number one, you know, sort of all time OTP, not to be gross about it, is Harriet Vane and Peter Wimsey from the Dorothy L. Sayers Peter Wimsey mysteries. You know, it's one of those things where whenever I tell people to read those books, because it's my favorite series of all time, I have three different sets of books, like one at home in Houston, and then the new Harper versions that they put out, and then also like an old mass market paperback set. Like, I've got my bases
Aww.
Covered.
You haven't bought it in ebook yet, though.
I bought the first one in ebook.
Okay. I was going to say, that's my hallmark of really loving a series.
That's when you own it in ebook, too? I own Fangirl in, like, six different formats. But
the thing about having it in ebook is that then I always have it on my phone, and I can have it with me whenever I want, whenever the urge strikes.
That's true.
So I've got that for Harry Potter, who's the big one.
Well, the Peter Wimsey books, the first three, I think it's like the first three or four, she's not in.
Okay.
And then in this book called Strong Poison, he comes in and essentially, like, saves her from being, like, hung. She's accused of a murder. She's accused of murdering her lover, which in 1925 was, like, an actual scandalous thing where they were like, this woman is a fallen woman! And the whole first chapter of the book is just, it's the end of the trial, and the judge is giving, like, a summation to the jury, and he's, like, summing up the facts of the case. And as he's summing up the facts of the case, and, you know, it's sort of looking really clear that he thinks that this woman's guilty, Peter Wimsey, who is a sort of dilettantish detective, is sitting up in the stands, like, with his mother going, like, she's innocent. She's innocent. and the whole book is just him trying to, you know, sort of
clear her name,
but he proposes to her awkwardly in, like, their first meeting, and she's like,
awesome.
Oh no. I didn't. And she's her line is there have been so many beastlinesses. Cuz she's in prison, and she's sort of, and then when he leaves, she was like, I shall give the footman instructions to admit you at any time. You will always find me at home. And she's in jail. But anyway, so their relationship develops, and they don't, you know, they do eventually, spoiler alert, get married, but they don't get together for, like, three books. And one of the reasons that I love this relationship so much is that it's a real, you know, issue for Harriet Vane, because she's not wealthy. She's a writer. She has always had to make her own way in the world. Mm-hmm. And Peter Wimsey sort of proposes at sort of, like, regular intervals. And he's made it clear, like, from the beginning that he's in love with her. And she's like, I don't, you know, I've been in this horrible relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't think I can be in another relationship. And also, like, you know, there's all these issues of, like, you know, what does it mean for me as a writer if I get married? You know, what is the view that's going to be put on me? As a, you know, what am I going to have to change about myself? Because she doesn't believe that he actually, she's like, well, you know, you say that you think that it's fabulous that I have my own career, but you know,
when we actually get married, you're going to want me to cook your
dinner.
You're going
to want me to, yeah, you know, it's like, I'm like losing coherence. But
that's always the sign of a good
story. I know.
Story.
So there's four Harriet Vane, Peter Wimsey books. It's Strong Poison, where he saves her from being hanged. This is going to be the Rainbow Rowell of this episode.
Which we have cleared up. It is Rowell like towel.
Thank you. And then in the second book featuring them, it's called Have His Carcass, where she has decided to go on this walking tour to sort of, like, finish her next book and sort of get away from things. And then she finds a dead body sort of is swept up in all this publicity around it. And he sort of helps her solve that case. And then the third book is my absolute favorite, and it's called Gaudy Night. And it's set at a women's college, and I went to a women's college, so it's nice. And it's all about, you know, being an artist, and can you be a partner with someone, and, you know, still, and it's all about him sort of showing her that he cares about, you know, not just her sort of, like, as this hot lady he saved, but also, like, what, you know, what she does, because she's having trouble with a book, and she's like, you know, everything feels really cardboard and terrible, and I don't think I like it. And, you know, he's like, well, you could just rip it out and start again. And she's like, oh my God, that would hurt a lot. And he's like, what would it matter if it made a good book? And I was just like, oh, you're perfect. Marry me. So that for me, like, ever since I read them, has been sort of like the ultimate romance for me.
Okay.
Because in the fourth book, they go on their honeymoon and they find the owner of the house they've bought, like, murdered in the house.
I know.
And it's so great. I don't think I've done a very good job talking about how much I love Harriet Vane and Peter Wimsey, but it's all about sort of, like, you know, longing and wanting someone, but not feeling like you are, you know, in a place, like, just, like, fear and sort of not wanting to sort of give yourself over because you might lose yourself in this relationship. And it feels really modern. I was rereading Gaudy Knight, as I do once a year. The questions of like, you know, can a woman have it all? Like, what are you sacrificing when you like work? What are you sacrificing when you like go home and raise children? Like, you know, and stay at home. But, so Dorothy L. Sayers, Harriet Vane, mm-hmm. Peter Wimsey. And then also, I said fangirl earlier, but I am, like, deeply invested in that romance.
That one is very compelling.
It's very compelling because I love those sorts of stories where someone is sort of, like, figuring out things about themselves and, you know, not being afraid.
And then there's someone who comes along and is like, I see all these things that you're recognizing in yourself, and I think they're great.
And I will raise you how great you are.
Yes. And like, then, let me tell you all of these things that you've just discovered about yourself. Let me tell you how great they are. I love it.
and then my third would be Anne Elliot and
Frederick
Wentworth in Persuasion.
Oh my god.
I love Elizabeth Darcy, but like lately for me Persuasion has been...
That was my favorite in middle school.
I mean, it's so great. Just like Second Chances and... You know, and her horrible fucking family.
How they both buried this thing.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
And then they finally realize that each other, they still love each other. Oh my god!
I always enjoy looking at the sort of peripheral happy marriages in Jane Austen because mm-hmm. there's always like the sort of central like parent marriage is always kind of terrible.
Yeah.
But then you've got like her aunt and uncle, the Gardeners in Pride and Prejudice,
yes,
and then
who
you've
clearly
got...
are just like. Love each other and having a fabulous time.
I know, they're adorable. I love them. It's like, well, we'll have to combine ourselves to Derbyshire. It's like, no, stay together forever. And, you know, you get the feeling that Mrs. Phillips probably loves her husband too, you know, that kind of thing. And, like, and then in Persuasion, the Crofts, Admiral Croft and his wife, are just,
and
they're just so wonderful.
And he's, like, kind of crazy, and she's like, well, this is what I married. He's great, isn't he? I'm like, oh... And she's just like, yep, I'm just sort of along for the ride.
Yeah, I mean, I love relationships that sort of are partnerships and not sort of, you know, I'm, you know, giving myself over, which is, I think, one of the reasons why the 50 Shades book just did not work for me, because I did not believe that person had any kind of, like, agency outside of, you know, that. But I think it's, you know, writing a romance is hard. It's very tough to not make it sound sort of samey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and especially with romance, the category, you know, the genre, you know, there are so many rules that you have to follow while not seeming to be following the rules that, you know, it's a little daunting.
Yeah. I'm actually not a big genre romance reader.
You're missing out, dude.
I see, the thing is that there are so few that actually really spark for me.
Mm-hmm.
When they work, they really work. I get really into it. But if it's if I read a lot of the genre and it just doesn't really speak to me, and so it's boring if it's not working for you.
Well, I think anything is boring if
it's
not
true.
Working for you.
This is 100% true.
It applies to lots of things. One of the things that I love about, you know, romance novels is that, you know, I know intellectually that it's going to be fine, that, you know, mm-hmm. that they're going to get together.
Out in the end.
But, you know, I'm just a little worried.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, that meddlesome relative is really being meddlesome right now. You know, it's always, you know, the best romances, I think, for me, sell that sort of, like, you know how it's going to end, but they make you forget about it for a hot second.
Yeah. Well, as long as we're talking about Jane Austen,
as we should.
Let's cover the third in my trifecta of her favorites, is Emma, which Emma does that Dark Night of the Soul fantastically.
I have not read Emma since probably high school.
Okay.
One of the reasons that Emma for me, it's, and this is completely personal, is that I get really anxious. I'm like, girl, what are you doing?
Yep.
I see too much of myself in the sort of meddlesome, judgmental side of Emma, and I'm just like, it's too close. It's too close.
Too much. Yeah.
Like, I haven't watched the movie since it came out. Like, there's some things where I'm just like, I can't. Must look away.
That's fair. But I love the point in Emma right before everything gets resolved where she's fairly certain she just realized that she's in love with Knightley. because she thinks he's in love with Harriet. And she's like, this is my fault. I've ruined my life because I can't stop meddling in things.
Yeah.
And I just have to live with it. These people are going to be in my life, and I'm
just going to have to carry on. Yeah.
I'll have to carry on. And so she's just sort of, there's this wonderful passage where she's just in misery and trying to figure out how to pull herself together to go on with life.
You know what I can never stop rewatching, though? It's Clueless.
Oh, yes.
Which is, you know,
yes,
the most perfect adaptation to end all adaptations. Just...
It captures the spirit of the book in a way that a lot of more literal adaptations do not.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but this is one thing where I know it's going to work out in the end. I know that there's going to be a happy ending, but for a while I really believe that it's not going to work out. And so of course when that makes it, makes rereading this book all the more delicious, mm-hmm. because I can sit there and I can sort of luxuriate in the pain knowing that it's going to end.
Yeah.
And that's extremely satisfying.
Luxuriating in the pain, knowing that it's going to end. That actually is incredibly descriptive of many of my favorite romances. But I mean, you know, those are, you know, the sort of, well, for you, when you're reading something and you're sort of like rooting for a relationship,
mm-hmm.
do you find that it's sort of like a fantasy element of like, you know, sort of like applying it to your own life? Or do you just enjoy it sort of separate from?
Sometimes. That was certainly why I liked Persuasion the first time, as it sort of resonated with something that was happening in my life. The thing is that there's this whole long-standing joke about how all women want to marry Mr. Darcy. That's not true for me. I think that Darcy and I would not get along great. I think, like, if Elizabeth and I were friends and she was dating this guy, I'd be like, yeah, he's great, I really like him, but I wouldn't want to date him myself.
Yeah.
But I'm still really invested in that relationship because I'm convinced that they're perfect for each other.
Yeah.
And so I guess in some sense that does apply to my own life, where I want to find someone who matches me and complements me as well.
I would like to find my analogous person, thank
exactly.
you.
Exactly. But I don't want Darcy myself. I think Knightley and I would get along well, but...
Well, I don't know. I could probably, you know, me and Wentworth could probably... I could
see that.
Off with Wentworth, yeah. But... I do love a naval man.
Mm. Hard to argue with that.
Yeah. I would marry Peter Wimsey in a heartbeat, though. Like, in a heartbeat. I just love him so much. I'd love his dumb monocle.
I would marry Gilbert Blythe. I think we would get on very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mostly, I found that I just love... I suppose in this way it does translate into my actual life, is that my favorite romances have extremely cranky, opinionated girls... and men who love them.
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly.
So I guess in that sense.
I mean, one of my favorite things about the Peter Wimsey, Harriet Vane thing is in a short story that she wrote after the last novel had been published called Tall Boys, which is the name of their country home. Mm-hmm. They're out for a holiday and Harriet Vane's trying to finish a book. And so she's on deadline. So it's Peter's job to sort of keep the kids out of her hair.
Okay.
And that's the whole book. It's just
oh
him,
my God.
It's just him sort of like trying to
and then there's the
like
children.
And then there's sort of like a parenthetical domestic mystery, but like I just found that so endearing that he was just like, I'm sorry, your mother's working, you can't talk to her, and I'm like, oh my God, he's protecting her writing time, that's adorable.
That sounds really charming.
I mean, I'm glad that no one is here to see the flaily cardigan thing that I just did, where I'm wrapping the cardigan more tightly around myself because I had so many feels. You know, I just yeah.
Yeah, that sounds very charming.
It's so charming! Oh my God, I love this book so much. I was gonna flail about when he proposes, but when he proposes for the final time, which he accepts,
mm-hmm.
he takes off, because they're walking around Oxford, and that's good. They're walking around Oxford, and he takes off his, like, you know, Don's cap, and he says, pluck it, nay, magistra.
Oh.
And she goes, pluck it. Just like, oh my God! Which is basically like, does it please you, mistress? And she's like, it does. It pleases me.
That's so cute. it's also one of those things that is extremely specific to those characters.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for... I think that's probably part of the reason why genre romance doesn't really speak to me, is because a lot of it feels very generic rather than very keenly observed and very specific to the characters at hand. which is the sort of thing that I always want.
Hmm.
Is I'm not looking for a generic ideal romance. I want two people who think each other are great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, this is where our two paths diverge in the wood, because I love genre romance.
Yes.
Precisely because, you know, it is, precisely because it is sort of, you know, you get the same story with different characters.
It's soothing.
Kind of. I feel like soothing is almost insulting.
Maybe.
Like, I don't ever feel soothed when I'm reading them if they're doing their job right.
There is a certain... This is why I reread books dozens of times, though, is because there's a certain amount of satisfaction in getting... one of the ones, actually, that I read over and over and over again is Sorcery and Cecilia by Caroline Stevermer and Patricia C. Reedy.
I have not read that.
Oh, my God. It's a...
I think Ellen Kushner is never going to let me in her house again.
Oh, no. I can lend it to you. Oh, so Sorcery and Cecilia is a Regency fantasy where it was just these two writers who were going to play the letter game, which is where you each have a character and you write to each other as those characters.
Oh my God, that's so awesome. And I want to do that.
It sounds like so much fun. And you never talk about where the story is going or sort of what you're figuring out. You're just playing this character development game. And they wrote a novel in this way.
Oh my God!
And then
amazing.
They sort of did some polishing to make sure that all the parts came together. But they basically just wrote a novel like that.
That's so great.
And so it's a Regency fantasy, and it's so charming and funny, and it's these characters are great. And so my favorite is there are two romances in it. Naturally, the two cousins who are writing to each other, Kate and Cecilia, Cece. And so Kate is my favorite. Kate and she has to fake being engaged to this Marquis, and it's super great.
Marquis?
Yeah.
I don't know, I always pronounce it Marquis because Marquis makes me think of, there's this, movie theater in Houston, which was where the IMAX was for a long time. The only IMAX was the Edwards Marquis in Houston, and so that's... I always see Marquis just to make it not sound like that. To not make me think about like my most awkward high school relationship, which was at that theater.
Oh no!
Anyway, moving swiftly along.
I actually sort of think it might be pronounced Marquess in English.
I think you're right,
because the English don't like pronouncing French words as though they're French, like valet, which...
Oh, English people! You know who has a valet? Peter Wimsey.
Of course he does.
Of course he does.
Naturally.
Bunter, most useful man on the planet.
But the...
iPhone is named Bunter. That's how much I love
perfect.
It. Perfect. All of my mobile devices have been named after, like, famous detective sidekicks.
Awesome. Do you have a Jarvis? That's
not yet.
Not really a
detective, when I get, like, a fucking space phone.
Okay.
This is, you know... Yeah. When I get a phone that can, like, talk to my brain...
This is
you know, an old iPhone.
Yes.
It's not like this one needs to be charged after like an hour.
Oh dear.
So, I don't know what its problem is.
Poor baby.
All the technology in my life is dying, except for my beautiful iPad mini, which I keep lovingly on my desk. Well, we're at the 30-minute mark, so are there any closing thoughts you have on romance in books and stuff you...
Yeah, I suppose it's just I care about the details. The details of the characters and the way that these particular details intersect with each other. That's, I think, what makes romance really spark for me.
I have a question.
Okay.
That is not actually related to a book, but because we were talking about Nora Ephron last time.
Yes.
When Harry Met Sally.
Mm-hmm.
I have read several articles on the internet that do not think that they should have gotten together.
Really?
Did they think that it would have been... more interesting had they just stayed friends. And I am on the record as saying that they are adorable.
Yes.
But I can see the argument.
Yeah, I can...
I can see it both ways. I think either way it would have been fine.
They're very clearly two characters who love each other, but I think that...
And I think that one of the reasons I disagreed with that theory is because I cannot for the life of me remember where or when I read this article. But they were saying that in the end, you know, when it's their monologue,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about their relationship, and they're talking about the cake, and Billy Crystal was saying, like, and we had this sauce on the side because, you know, some people don't like it. Some people saw that as like being mocking, and I found it adorable personally.
I did too. It was he knows how she works, and he's
speaking of adjacent happy marriages. Carrie Fisher and Bruno Kirby in that movie.
Fantastic.
Although, just... like, when Bruno Kirby died, I definitely started crying. Because, like, someone tweeted, like, she's gonna be out there again. I was like, no! Why would you do that, Satan? Why would you say
that? What's wrong with you?
I'm crying a little bit right now just thinking about it. These fucking fictional characters. Like, oh my god.
Oh dear.
I know. I was like, why would you say something like that?
I didn't realize I was that invested in that relationship.
Right? Oh, the wagon wheel coffee table. Oh my god. Definitely just like wiped away literal tears on this podcast. Okay, so that was my closing thought for it.
Great. Thanks, Jen.
You know, it should be believable as a great friendship and as a great romance.
Yes,
because that's what partnership is.
Yes.
So moving on to, do we have questions? I don't think we have any questions. Guys, I feel like we're doing something wrong. So if you... what do you think, Bridget? Well, my client Anne asked favorite Tom Hiddleston hair color.
Oh, we could talk about that.
We could talk about that. Definitely not Loki.
No.
Because his weave in that is just awful.
It's terrible.
Someone pointed out that he looks like one of those Christmas trees that opens like an umbrella, like a fake Christmas tree. So it's like, what has been seen cannot be unseen.
Oh no.
Why would you do that?
See, I think the black Loki hair makes him look sallow. I do like the red that he has been sporting.
Well, that is his actual hair color.
Well, yes.
He is ginger. That's...
But no, there's also in, is it Cranford? He's got sort of like,
yes, the blonde.
Strawberry blonde hair. I don't like that one as much.
Oh, see, I love the blonde that he has in the Wallander books, because it's like curly.
I like the really sort of dark, rich red on him.
Yeah. I also think that he's, you know, he's dealing very well with his swiftly receding hairline.
Yes.
His hairline is the coast of Texas, and erosion is taking it away.
And today's his birthday.
Is it today? Oh my god, happy birthday, Tom
Hiddleston. Well, I follow him on Twitter, and he tweeted something about how he had a very lovely birthday.
Bless his heart.
Just came to mind. Happy birthday, Tom
Hiddleston. I enjoy that he and Jessica Chastain are friends, and like, she had a birthday party where it was like karaoke, and I was just like,
that's really charming.
It's just the most endearing mental image I've ever had about another person. I was like, But I think that may have been our only question.
That was our only question. So we spent 2 minutes talking about Tom Hiddleston's hair color. So send us more questions, please.
And also, you know, if anyone listening ever has an idea for, you know, something that they would like to hear us talk about, you know, a particular segment of the publishing industry or an aspect of writing, or even just if there's a book that you love that you want us to talk about, feel free to send it our way.
We would be more than glad
because we want this to be fun for us and useful and interesting and entertaining for you.
Yeah. Otherwise, Jen and I can just get together and drink wine and talk to each other.
Which we can do. And if you think that that's something we should do, let us know. So, let's talk about what we're reading right now.
Yeah.
Bridget.
I am currently reading Small Gods by Terry Pratchett, which our friend Amy Boggs lent to me. Because I said that...
Not just any Boggs.
That's true.
Best Twitter handle ever.
Yes. So brilliant. Anyway, our friend Amy, who is smart and interesting and an excellent agent. Anyway.
I haven't had lunch, so I'm a little tipsy.
Okay. Yes, it's important to note that while we drink wine during these podcasts...
We also have water.
We also have water. Also, we start at the same time we start recording, so we're sober, actually, for most of these podcasts. We're just like this.
Yeah, this is just how we roll.
Anyway, more dignified topics.
So you're reading...
So I'm reading Small Gods, and it's because I mentioned either on Twitter or to Amy, or possibly both, that I had never really read a Terry Pratchett that I loved. I really loved Good Omens, but that's also half Neil Gaiman, who I historically love. So I loved Good Omens, but it's not my favorite Neil Gaiman book. And it's sort of, you can look at that and see who wrote what parts. It all comes together very well, but you can tell whose influences are shaping which parts. And so I've read a couple other Terry Pratchett books, and I was just like, I get it, but I don't share it. It's sort of how I feel about Channing Tatum.
What?
I know.
Oh my god.
Also Idris Elba, there's something fundamentally broken in my brain.
Oh my god, there is. I'm just gonna look away for a moment, because, oh my god, the Magic Mike trailer, the new one, I've watched it so many times.
I watched it once, was like, okay.
Oh my god.
That's the thing.
Ugh.
Sorry,
Bridget?
I think
I thought we were
both
friends.
Of them, their heads are too round and they're so muscly, and I'm like, I'm Matt Smith and Tom Hiddleston. That's my type.
Why can't you like both?
Other people
but you
can.
Like Chris Evans?
I don't.
Who's big
I
and
like
muscly?
Him fine. He's not like my favorite.
Oh my god, he's my favorite.
Anyway, so
well, we've got fucking like 20 minutes to go because no one put in any questions.
Here.
God.
Let's just talk about
yeah, what are we doing wrong,
like,
people?
Hey, this is our Valentine's
oh my
Day
God,
episode.
Fuck. Okay. Sorry.
No.
Yeah.
It's our Valentine's Day episode. We can talk about the boys we like.
We can.
Small Gods is my... Amy decided that... Well, I've always said that I don't really like humor books.
It's a hard... It's very hard to...
Yeah. And, like, I like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fine, but I don't love it the way that many people do. I thought it was funny.
I'm on the record as actually really liking the movie adaptation, the one with Martin Freeman. I thought it was really charming, but apparently that's, like, a bad opinion to have.
Yeah,
so.
Clearly. So, I get why people like Terry Pratchett. I can recognize that what he does very well. But it's just not something that really speaks to me. Even when I think it's funny, it's just sort of there. And so Amy was like, oh no, but I don't like him for his humor. I like him for the other things he has to say. I was like, okay, what should I read? And she was like, I will set you up with something. So she brought me Small Gods and told me to read it. And I'm halfway through and I like it. It's funny and it's smart and it's got depth to it and I get it and I'm still sort of like, well, it's good, it's fine. I see why people really like him.
Yes,
I totally get it. It's not really my thing.
You know, I can understand how, you know, something could be, you know, the Channing Tatum of, I mean, Charming Tater is his name.
Yes. Charming Potato.
He's adorable.
Yeah.
I just find him. I just love that he was an actual stripper.
I know.
I think that's the thing, is I'm just like, oh.
Really? It's like, oh.
Bless. There's a video somewhere of him dancing in like tube socks. Like, I just love it. What am I reading right now? I just finished reading Jeff Vandermeer's the second two books in the.
Okay. So
Area
I was talking about that a couple weeks ago. So what were your thoughts on it?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I mean, I wish that, I mean, as happens sometimes with Jeff Vandermeer, I kind of wish that there were a few more answers. But at the same time, like, I really liked the direction it ended up going. Because if you don't know, the first book is written from one point of view.
Yeah.
The second book is written from another point of view. And the third book is written from
multiple
points of views. And it's really well done. I mean, there was just so much in that book that I was just like, this is really interesting. And I think that, you know, apart from the sort of like weird stuff about Area X, I thought the you know, looking at sort of like, you know, the culture of bureaucracy and the culture of sort of research and stuff was really interesting in this sort of like pathological way. The second book follows a guy who has come in and he is the new director of the Southern Reach, which is the bureaucratic organization that is in charge
like
of
research
or researching Area X. Yeah. But I really liked it. You know, I think that this is, for me, one of his more successful sort of works. I think it probably is one big novel that they probably cut up
but
into.
The other thing is that I didn't get why they split it up into three until I read them. I was like,
they're very different.
Is like 120 pages.
It's,
I was like, why is this,
you know,
a novel?
They're very different.
But they
at the
don't
same
really
time
go together very well.
But at the same time, they felt like a cohesive whole to me.
Yes,
they didn't feel like
it's not like
it's not
three sequential.
It didn't feel like he sat down to write Annihilation and then was like, this is how I feel the sequel is going to be.
Yeah,
I felt like he probably saw it as a whole. with that structure.
I have heard it described as annihilation is one leg, authority is one leg, and acceptance is the body that sort of brings them together. So that together they make a whole body. They individually, they don't really...
Acceptance is the pelvis? Is that what that
means? No, they're each one leg. And then they sort of... Because authority has very little to do with acceptance.
But it's still... But the body, like... I don't know.
When you say leg,
it could be either chair or, like, a human body. And so if it's a chair, then where's the top? And if it's a body, it's the pelvis.
I suppose it's the pelvis / torso area.
Because where are the arms?
It's an armless novel. Come on.
That doesn't work at all as a metaphor. I feel like, you know, there's three legs, and the sort of top is just the whole novel. Like, it's just, it's the whole.
Yeah.
To me, it felt like a whole. It felt like a whole story.
Okay.
Told in a sort of weird way.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I have to say I really enjoyed it. And then
regardless of what metaphor we're using, it's good.
Yeah, it's good. And then I read Ascension, which I liked. And then, and now I'm reading Deborah Harkness and Discovery of Witches.
Oh, how do you like that?
I'm only like 50 pages in, so okay. I don't feel like I can really give an opinion right now.
Yes.
I like it. I mean, I love sort of like magical Oxford books.
Yeah.
Sort of generally. So like I'm predisposed to like it. The one thing that sort of has kept me from being like into it so far is that I am unclear about how people see magic in this world. Like, is it an AU werewolves are known, or is it a AU werewolves are not known kind of thing? You know, to borrow the AO3 tagging system. Like it has not been made clear to me as a reader that people know or don't know about the existence of supernatural stuff.
Oh, interesting.
Because, so the main character is from a family of witches, and the way that she talks about witches and vampires and, like, demons and, like, supernatural creatures is from a place of sort of, like, casual familiarity.
It takes them for granted.
But then she also refers to, like, humans who are, like, non-supernatural people.
The muggles.
The muggles, basically. And, but, you know, instead of, you know, when she recounts a childhood sort of anecdote where she asks, you know, a friend's parent, like, you know, why don't you do the dishes this way, like, with magic? And then her mother was like, no, you know, people just don't understand. I'm like, well, not understanding and not knowing are two different things.
Like, are we keeping the secret, or do they just not?
I'm starting to think that they're keeping it secret, but to me that's a little bit less interesting. I'm also really into the sort of, like, supernatural bureaucracy aspect of many things. Like, I find that fascinating. Yes. Like, how do you...
Like, the glimpses we got into the Ministry of Magic in Harry Potter are fascinating.
So fascinating.
The Minister of Magic and the Muggle Prime Minister and how they intersected. That
I wanted an entire series
about their relationship. Yes.
And then they fall in love.
naturally.
But we're from different worlds. But yeah, so, I mean, I'm 50 pages in, so we'll sort of, jury's out. Yeah. On, you know.
You haven't quit yet, so that's a good
thing. But one thing I want to say that I purchased today that I'm very excited about reading is the first Phryne Fisher novel. I don't know if you've heard about these. It's Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries.
Oh, okay.
It was coming up on my Netflix. Like, you would like this.
I am absolutely positive that both of us would like this TV show.
Oh, my God. My sister and I are like 2 episodes away from being done with season 2. It's so great.
I fully believe it. I really want to watch it. I just haven't had the time to sit down and get into it yet.
Oh, my God. The main character is this... So, it's set in Australia in the 20s. So, you know, you think that it's going to be sort of, like... She's, like, a flapper, and she's sort of, like, really liberated. But she also has this, like, really interesting past. And the burn between her and the, like, detective inspector that she's sort of, like, pining for is... It's so slow. But at the same time, I'm just like, I just want to mash their faces together. Kiss. But she's also, like, in this way, she's not, like, sitting around and, like, waiting for him to sort of make a move. Yeah. She has sex with, like, a different person every episode.
Really?
And it's never, it's amazing. And she's never, like, judged for it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's never sort of, like, punished for it in this, like, you know, you would think that a show like that, you know, someone would be there being like, what are you doing? But,
Scandal.
But she's always like, you know, no, as long as I'm not hurting anybody, you know, it's so good. And the hats are amazing. The hats are worth the price of admission. Just like, I mean,
the price of admission being a Netflix membership.
But I mean, but the hats, like the hats. Mm. I want to find one of those hats. They're like these.
Yes.
She just like the, like all of her clothes are like each one is more amazing than the last.
Very nice.
The only quibble is that, you know, there only seem to be two policemen in the entirety of Melbourne. So like I'm just like, oh, it's these guys again. There's right. No other cops there.
No.
Whatever.
Certainly not.
But so yes, that's what I'm reading right now. I guess we should wrap up since no one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a short ass episode this week. Thank you so much for listening. And, you know, you can always give us questions, comments, concerns, feedback via either email, shippingandhandlingpodcast@gmail.com, or via Twitter @shipandhandling, or via Tumblr. Our ask box is on our website. And on Tumblr, you can actually ask things anonymously. Yes. So keep that in mind if you don't want to, you know.
So if you have some secret. Scandalous question.
Secret scandalous question. And also, you know, you can always ask us and say, also, I'd like this to be private. And we will honor that.
Gladly withhold your identity.
But we can't make it interesting without you. And if you think that we should just give up the question part, then tell us so, and we will.
Oh. Yeah, so we hoped to make this relevant for people who don't know that much about publishing. But
it may be that ship has sailed.
Yes. It may be that you need a certain amount of publishing in order to publishing know-how in order to find this podcast.
That is entirely true, yes. Well, on that note, thank you again for listening. Happy Valentine's Day or Galentine's Day or Palentine's Day.
Whatever you're celebrating.
Whatever you're celebrating.
We hope you enjoy it.
And, this is something I wanted to bring up earlier, but I didn't because it did not fit in. But someone on Tumblr pointed out that they're pushing that 50 Shades of Grey is being released on Valentine's Day to ignore the fact that it's actually being released on Friday the 13th. Because it's got a Friday release date, as all films do.
Naturally.
And Friday the 13th is not Valentine's Day.
No.
Amazing. Amazing. And on that note, thank you so much for listening. Bye!